Testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, 1, 2, 3. I'm W.S. Thackeray, and I'm interviewing Mrs. A.F. Nation, formerly Major Madeline Nation, CWAC, the 5th of June, 1980.
Turn on the machine now. If you'd just like to start, Mrs. Nation, that'll be fine.
My friend, Mrs. John Harker, was doing some sort of war work, so I then called her up. She told me to go to a hall on Broadway on such and such an evening, and when the time came, Granddad drove me down. Granddad, I shouldn't have said that. At the hall, there were about 50 women dressed in blue skirts, white shirts, ties, and berets, and they were drilling. My husband and I had ever seen anything like it before. Mrs. Harker put a whistle in my hand and said, "Lewis, at precisely 20:30, when I had figured out that that meant 8:30, I blew. The parade broke up and marched off, some to one classroom, some to another, while an equally large number of women came out from their courses and formed a parade. Mr. Nation watched for a while, this is awkward, and then turned to Mrs. Harker and said, "If you can get my wife out there drilling, I will give you $25 for your organization." Needless to say, out I went. That $25 pushed me in a bewildered state into the services. Service Corps, the Red Cross Corps, and the Army, out of which I emerged only 6 years later. That was in the very early days of the Vancouver BC Women's Service Corps. In Victoria, it had been formed in 1938, right after Munich, with the object of training women for service in the Army should they ever be recognized. We were soon moved down to one of the armies where we had sergeant instructors and wonderful cooperation from the Army. Eventually, I was promoted to commandant of the Vancouver Detachment, and one of my first nightmares was when we were ordered to Victoria to be reviewed by Her Royal Highness Princess Alice, who had been interviewing women's volunteer services right across the country. We set off for Victoria, all 200 of us, in great spirits. That night at the Basie Street Armory, we were all lined up, and she'd been through the ranks when she called for the Hollow Square. Aghast, I whispered to my adjutant, "How do you do that?" She didn't know. I called over the sergeant major. She didn't know. Fortunately, some of the other detachments led off. I watched them and copied them. Princess Alice made a long speech, but I never heard a word. It was much too difficult trying to figure out how to get out of there. Of course, we had to go first. But fortunately, I did the right thing, and we filed off the parade ground and up some stairs to the safety of the gallery. In 1940, John Kennedy, who was senior commander of the BC Women's Service Corps, asked me to go with her across Canada as far as Halifax to determine the state of preparedness of the other groups of volunteer corps, to meet the DOCs of all the districts, and to present a brief to the Minister of National Defense. The BC government had backed her, and I tagged along. We saw all kinds of women. Some were in fancy uniforms with stars and crowns on their shoulders, to which they had no right, and some were based on our own corps, having the same regulations and uniforms. But all were completely sincere women, training girls for eventual service in the Army, as we were, and we were most proudly received. The district officers commanding were very helpful, too. Many of them I knew, because they'd been to RMC with my brothers and my husband. When we arrived in Ottawa, we were received privately by Princess Alice, and also attended a large meeting she had called of heads of all types of women. We worked very hard on that trip. Joan Kennedy had brought a small typewriter with her, and we spent our evenings working on the brief to put before the minister. She had had the foresight to write to the chief commander of the ATS, Dame Helen Gwen Vaughan, and obtain from her the rules and regulations governing the ATS. This had to be adjusted to Canadian conditions and was very detailed, containing proposed pay, aid, limits, chain of command, leave, uniforms, and all the other things that go into the establishment of an army corps. The brief was well received, and we were congratulated on it, so we returned home well satisfied that the wheels were beginning to turn, and it would not be too long before we would be taken over by the army. It was only about 3 weeks after that that the Minister of Defense was killed in a plane crash. The new minister, Colonel the Honorable J.R. Ralston, was swamped with work, and nothing more was heard of recognition. After some months, Churchill demanded more men from Canada. When Oliver assured him we were sending all the men available, he countered with, "What about your women? Why are they not replacing men as cooks, waitresses, stenographers, telephone operators, and so on?" That forced a decision by Ottawa, but it was not until July 1941 that an order in council created the Canadian Women's Honor Corps. I might add that the rules and regulations that John Kennedy and I had prepared were fully incorporated in those governing the CWAC. The Matron-Chief of the Canadian Honor Nursing Sisters, Miss Elizabeth Smellie, was sent out across the country from Ottawa to deal with matters of policy and to interview heads of volunteer services with a view to enlisting them as senior officers in the new corps. This
would have been June 1941. That's when the...
Yes.
Okay. If you'd like me to stop for a minute, I can.
Oh, we still don't.
Oh, yeah.
Came part of the Red Cross Corps, all sorts of problems arose. For instance, from headquarters in Toronto, we were ordered to buy six thin gray dresses which were not at all suitable for the unheated armors in the West, and heavy gray greatcoats, only good for braving the snow and cold of the East. Our girls had never bought anything but a berry, which we sold to them for 20 cents, and had worn their own skirts brown or black if they couldn't afford dark blue. These new uniforms were a hardship, as our members were all working girls, and there were very few from the more affluent classes. As for buying gray sweaters which they needed, the new Red Cross controller was thoroughly shocked to see the Vancouver's handsome, most improperly dressed in orange, green, purple, and pink sweaters on top of their inadequate dresses. As soon as the CWAC was established and Joan Kennedy given the rank of Lieutenant Colonel, she came to see us and said she wanted Barbie, that Barbara Nation, as a reliable NCO was needed for duty in the military hospital in Vancouver. Would Barbie join up immediately and report to Victoria? This was a shock. Barbie was underage, but Mrs. Kennedy bust the other side. It was quite a decision to make, and I was glad to her state that she made it and enlisted. 10 months later, when Grandad and I... when we were living in the Georgia Hotel, a call came through from Ottawa. It was Joan Kennedy again. This time she wanted me. The DOC MD4, Brigadier General Powell, needed officers who could speak French. He'd known me a long time and told Colonel Kennedy to get in touch with him. That afternoon I spent walking up and down my sitting room at the Georgia wondering, should I, shouldn't I? Oh, you don't want all this stuff. Too personal.
Well, okay, let me go on with it. You had gone from the BC Women's Service Corps to the Canadian Red Cross.
It was taken over by the Red Cross Corps, the Canadian Red Cross Corps, and we became all members of the Red Cross.
And you had to buy your own uniform.
I was the only one of the 19 detachments who objected. And I had the biggest detachment, you see. There were 200 girls in my detachment. But all the others all meekly said, yes, they would like to join the Red Cross Corps. Well, I didn't like that at all. For one of the reasons that I spoke about, that we didn't want to buy clothes. Most of those girls were of the working class. And there was even one woman who walked all the way from Burnaby to Vancouver and then grilled with us and length to do her clerical work or whatever it was.
Mm. And walk home again.
Yes. Oh, they were wonderful girls. And a great many of them enlisted, of course, in the Army. And then after the Army, soon after came the Air Force. And much later, the Navy.
Okay, so your organization really was absorbed by the Red Cross. And then when the CWAC was
formed and recruiting started, did the members of the Red Cross Corps volunteer at all,
yes,
en masse, or just
no,
as they wished, or?
No, just individuals.
I see. And was there a fair
yes, quite a number of
turnout
them joined up,
mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
But not all of some of them, you see.
Oh, sure, some of them. Right. Well, in the first instance, the CWAC, when it was first established, was under the Department of National War Services, as I recall from reading about it, and people didn't use the rank of Army ranks. They say they used, Lieutenant Colonel was, I believe, a chief, called a chief commandant? And,
yes, in the beaches and at Women's Service Corps.
Ah.
But though in the Army, we got the Army
right
ranks right away.
When did you join the Army?
I joined in 1942,
mm-hmm,
and I went with Bobby to St. Anne's. We went right together. There's a picture of us, and here we are at St. Anne's with our white patches.
Oh,
when
yes,
we were cadets.
I see, yes, when you were
it was August 1942. She'd been in the Army for 10 months before I joined up.
So you were both at the officer training unit,
yes,
at the same time.
Yes, we were.
Yeah.
And here is that's one of me. No, there are no more of the Army. Well, that's Bobby in the Army. No.
Yeah. Okay. So you, where did you join? In Vancouver?
I went straight down to after they telephoned, and I walked up and down the Georgia Hotel,
oh, yeah,
room.
You wanted to be a
wondering whether I would or whether I wouldn't. But George was in the Navy, and Bobby was already in the Army, and Carrie was a sergeant major in the Home Guard.
Yeah.
Having been a major,
yeah,
in the First War.
Yeah.
And so I went east by train to Montreal, and there to Ottawa. And I stayed with Fred, actually, with John Kennedy in the barracks there, and joined up there.
Mm-hmm.
No, Montreal, I think.
And you went straight to this
officer
training?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of my time in the Army was as a staff officer. I had very little to do with the girls.
Well, what did you do? What was your training like at this officer Kennedy unit?
Oh, and that was really hard work.
Was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember when we'd go out on the parade, I'd run after my daughter's body, because she was tall and I could see her ahead of me, and she knew so much more about the Army than I did. And we'd go for long parades along the streets and around Bulgaria and St. Anne's and so on. And
get you all in shape, eh?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they'd count out cadets on the double and awful run right now. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But I was so much younger then, I could still do it. So I was overage by quite a lot. But
what sort of subjects did you take? Military
Law?
Military?
We took, yes. And we took, what's a course that I found so hard? I've forgotten now. But anything to do with any sort of mathematical work was never easy for me. And math reading, I found that very hard, math reading. And what else would we have taken? And then, of course, there were a lot of women in for home nursing. And
these are specialized courses. Did you take that at officer school?
The officer training course.
Oh, you did, eh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the idea was after that, of course, that you would come out and where most people would come and go out of it and be an officer in a CWAC company somewhere.
Yes,
right?
Yes. We went straight to Montreal when I graduated, and one of the first things I did was that we were one day at breakfast. The commanding officer of our company, who was Madeleine Saint-Laurent, the, with Saint-Laurent was the prime minister.
Yeah.
He was a captain at the time. And she said to me at breakfast, Mrs. Nathan, that you're going, your train leaves at such and such an hour, you're going to command. But it wasn't very high going to command for her, I didn't say that. Anyway, but she said, you're taking 200 girls to command this morning. Well, I was told to line up these girls on Hill Street, But I had a good, she gave me a good sergeant major, so we know how to line them up. And we marched down with a police escort, down across River Street, down across from Patton Street, down, right down to the Windsor Station. And we finally got them all, I finally got them all on board the train somehow or other. We got there, and we marched to the training center. And when I got there, I was called to the commandant's office. She was Major, well, Colonel Dover, she became, you know, quite well known in Calgary, between Norton and what have you. Anyway, when I got there, she said, Mrs. Jason, you were told to bring 100 girls to stand today. Why did you bring 101? I know more than you that I had brought 101. But anyway, I was on the map there. However, I got away all right. They didn't find me to do anything. But you know, when you get pushed into an organization, you've never done anything like it in your life.
Right.
You can't always be right.
No, you certainly can't. Not quite, no. So you, where did you go? You graduated after how long at this training school?
About a month.
About a month. So
yes,
then you were.
So.
Then you were.
Then I was sent to a camp just outside of Montreal with 2,000 men and 13. I think I had 13 girls in my company. You can imagine.
I don't know what else you did, but I know I can guess what you did.
Oh, we had an awful
time. Yeah, an awful time.
Keeping toms and all sorts of things. And so I was there for a while, and then they made me a recruiting officer in Montreal, and then I was posted to MD3, Kingston, which is the biggest one of the lot, because all the girls who worked in Ottawa headquarters were in that district, so there were a lot of girls.
That would have been 1942 or 3?
Yes, 42.
42.
Beginning of 43, I think.
Yeah.
And from there, then, when I got my majority, I was sent out to the Pacific Command to Vancouver.
You arose to a captain quite quickly then, after you...
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They called the job in Kingston called for a captain.
Uh-huh.
And then the establishment called for a captain. And then when I was sent to Vancouver, I got my majority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was the job there?
Well, that was quite a big job. I had to go all around the country, as far up as Prince Rupert, where we had girls stations, Kelowna, Vancouver, Victoria. Oh, we had girls all around the province.
Were you the commanding
I'm
officer for all the PWAC in the
not the commanding
officer.
I was the liaison officer between the women and the men. I was a staff officer. I wasn't a company officer.
No. At that time, very shortly thereafter, I guess, the organization of the PWAC was changed somehow, wasn't it? You had a small number of women with an army unit, and they nominally belonged to a company somewhere, but they actually didn't, the company wasn't actually a body of people at all. It was just a group here and a group there and a group here,
yeah.
And they all sort of went through one sort of, I suppose, an orderly room somewhere, and that, but they weren't actually, brought together in one place.
We were all the senior officers, we were called by Andy McNaughton down to Ottawa. And it was at that time that they proposed putting not CWAC on our shoulders, but the badges of, say, the Signal Corps or the engineers or whatever the girls were attached to. And most of us didn't like that. However, that was orders, and that's what happened.
That changed. It didn't last long, did it?
I don't know.
Seems to me I can remember. I always remember the badges, not the PWAC badges.
Yes.
Did you carry both sets? Would somebody carry both sets?
We had Palace Athene on our here. And then our badges.
Color badges. What
were our badges?
They were just a PWAC.
Yes, that's what I wore.
Yeah.
But the girls who were in the signals or engineers out there, something like that, They were clamoring to be recognized as part of, say, the signals.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, did they wear both badges or just the one?
Just one.
Just one. Mm-hmm. But they still wore their...
Yeah, so they still were recognized as that.
But
I remember going up to St. Rupert, where there were signals, girls and signals. And my goodness, they had an amazing time. They were up on very high. You had to go up in the rick to show the thing that swayed around up on the, like, streetcar track.
Huh.
And I went up, and your feet hung over, and you looked down miles down below. And when you got up there at the top of this mountain, there was a place where they had charts of everything going on in the Pacific Ocean, you know, around
mm-hmm.
outside of here. And those girls, they had to be on the alert at every moment in case something went on, and yet they had such a dull time. I don't know how they could stand it.
This was a little later, wasn't it? They gave the girls sort of a semi-operational role. They did operations room work, and they did. Sort of come out from being waitresses and orderly room clerks and typists and this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How many people were in this command? How many?
In the Pacific command?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know that I can remember, but there were quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose every unit had a few, some more than others.
Yeah.
Vancouver probably had a number there.
And Victoria.
Yeah. Did you notice any problems with the differences of pay between women and men?
I don't think so.
That was not a popular thing in those days. There wasn't nobody cared too much. It was
no.
And I suppose that in those days, of course, men tended to earn more than women because very often they were supporting families. So this was a consideration, I think, in pay in those days.
You couldn't join the army if you had children.
Women could. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't remember that, but that wasn't so important to me. I had never had so much money in my life. I used to keep money in my pocket here. It was perfectly wonderful.
Yeah.
I got $10 a day.
Oh, well. Yeah.
That was a lot.
Oh, it was. You could do very nicely on that, couldn't you?
I could.
Now, you lived in barracks, did you? When you came to Vancouver, did you live at home?
In Vancouver, I lived at home.
I see. So that you disappeared at the office every
year? Was in the old Hotel Vancouver Hotel.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Corner of Granville Street.
Yes, I liked that job, but... the most interesting way really was Kingston. That was a far bigger. There were far more girls in Kingston in MD3 in the Pacific Command.
Now,
but General Perks was wonderful. The girls, you know, there were about 400 girls living in that Vancouver Hotel in that company, and they were working and living there. And they never got anywhere. There was no garden, there was nothing, no place for them to go. And the senior officer there had me on the map because he'd seen some of our girls kissing American sailors on the street.
So I
couldn't do anything about that. And why shouldn't they? But it was just too bad that there wasn't any place for them to go.
Yeah.
So I went to see General Kirk and I told him my trouble, so the girls were cooped up in that hotel, working there all day and sleeping there at night. And the next day, he laid on the barracks in Stanley Park for us, and trucks to take the girls down there every day after work from the old hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd go down Georgia Street, pulling off their ties and opening their coats and shouting with joy. And then they'd get to those barracks and they'd rush into the water, you know, for a swim. It was summertime and warm.
Lovely.
He was a wonderful man to work for. Whereas the next man, who was the next man? General.
I don't
came after
him.
After George Fraser.
He came after that.
But he called them. He called a meeting or I don't know what you call it. Anyway, of all the senior officers of all the different corps. In Chilliwack, and we had to go. And he would ask the most embarrassing questions. And I was sitting beside a medical officer, less than colonel or a colonel, and he said, oh, just call me. I said, I couldn't possibly answer those questions. And I said, well, neither could I. So we sat holding hands, hoping we wouldn't be called on to get up and make fools of ourselves. But we didn't know all the strategy that, you know, you have to know if you're in the regular army then. I don't know why I've forgotten his name. Probably just as well.
Yeah, maybe. going back to Kingston, you were a recruiting officer there.
No, I was a recruiting officer in Montreal.
In Kingston, you were a staff officer.
Yes.
Were you on MD3, on
the
staff
MD3.
There. Yeah. And at that post, you were concerned with the administration of the GWAC units within the companies,
yes,
within the province.
And
within the district.
I was almost always in the south of that, very little to do with the girls.
Yeah. And that probably wasn't a bad thing, perhaps, was it?
No.
It was nice to go to a desk and not have to worry about other people's problems too much.
Yes.
And
have somebody come and see you.
Yeah, right.
Discuss their problems.
Right. Okay, so did you do much traveling in MD3? Did you have to go?
Yes, I went to Prince Rupert a couple of times.
MD3.
Oh, in MD3. Well, I went to Ottawa a great deal.
Yeah. You had quite a unit there, I suppose.
Yes. Oh, bigger. That was the biggest of all the just military districts across Canada, because all the girls who worked at headquarters.
In Ottawa, yeah.
They were all under MD3.
Seems to me there was some problem in Ottawa. The Civil Service Commission were a little taken aback by all these girls who were in the Army and doing work that they thought perhaps could be done by civil servants. Did you understand about that?
Oh, were they? I don't remember that.
Okay, that's fine. It's just, the Army prevailed, but I know, I just wondered if you had,
yeah,
there was some little
kerfuffle
there, and I wondered whether you...
I didn't have anything to do with it.
Okay. Well, we're skipping about a bit, but I suppose you were in Vancouver then, towards at the end of the war, were you?
Well, I got out on compassionate ground when my husband, he was sick, and I had to get out on his account.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out in, 1940. When did the war end, 47?
Oh, no, war ended in May of 1945.
No, 45. Well, I got out in...
Or at least the war in Europe did, anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I got out towards the end of that summer before when it was breaking up.
I see. In other words, before Japan surrendered in August? Somewhere in between that.
Yes.
I see. Okay. And so you didn't have anything really very much to do with the demobilization of
the
CWP? No, not very much. Because they really stayed on after the war, apparently, as far as I can make out, taking the place of service men who had been released.
Yes.
Because quite a number were shipped overseas after the war in Europe ended. They went to London and to Belgium or Holland, according to the history book, anyway.
Did they?
Yes.
Now, there's a girl who works here at night who went also to Italy.
Yes.
And
she
went right into Germany, I think. Tapped Irwin, she's a Mrs. Ricci, and she's on duty here at the desk in the evenings always.
Oh, yeah.
She's in the north of the time, so.
I might just take down her name. She might remember.
Yes. Her name is Mrs. Ricci. R-E-E-K-I-E.
Okay, and she works here in the evenings
at
the desk. Well, I might give her a call. I'd pop in and see her.
She had much more experience than I did.
Well,
going overseas.
No, there weren't too many who actually got to the a war, or into a theater of war. Who actually served in Belgium and Holland or in Italy. There was, a few hundred out of.
Yes, that's all.
Out of goodness me, how many were there? About 20,000 girls,
yeah,
women served in the
CWAC
during the war. I don't know, the total number. So that wasn't a very high portion, so that somebody did in a...
No, and she had quite an experience,
yeah.
I think.
Hmm. Well, I must give her a chat. Well, let me see if I have anything that I've written down. No, I don't. I think we just about covered all the sort of few questions I had in mind. Just wondered if anything you have think of that you haven't mentioned at all about this?
All about what?
Oh, there's something you haven't mentioned about this at all?
Oh, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. One of the first ones, the BC Women's Service Corps, I'm not sure whether that came out or not. It was started pre-war. Was it government support in any way, or was it simply somebody had to get some money somewhere, I suppose?
Yes. It was started mostly by Phyllis Leewright, and who became a major in the Canadian's Army Corps, and she still lives here. And there was one girl, and this Joan Kennedy, who, you know, rather got into trouble. She started off very well, and she was very smart in a lot of ways, but I think she got her head turned a little bit. Anyway, when Margaret Eaton came along, she rather passed out of the picture, Joan Kennedy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And whereas Margaret Kennedy, Margaret Eaton was a wonderful colonel. She was the only full colonel that we had.
Oh, yeah.
Mary Dover was a lieutenant colonel, and so was it. And there's somebody writing to me called Mary Barker, wanting to know what I know. I think there's a book coming out in the East.
Oh, well, it may well be. Nobody, I don't think, has written a history about it.
Well, I think somebody's writing
somebody
one now.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's interesting. Anyway, going back to this BC Women's organization, it was started
right after Munich.
As sort of a private organization, and a group got together and thought we'd better do something about this.
1938 it was started here by these two or three women, Phyllis Leewright, and the one whose name I cannot remember, and another one who wanted to go to Bethlehem. And so she was in on that, thinking she might get to Bethlehem. She was a very good shop in her day. And anyway, they started it, and the other one whom you must have known was a very gaunt looking woman. What was her name? And she married quite a nice man in the Yorkshire Trust. Everybody knew it. Mara. Her name was Mara.
Oh, yeah.
Nellie.
Yeah.
Nellie Mara. Nellie, who did she marry?
I don't know who she married.
Oh, your mother would
know. Mother would know, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, with this organization been going for a couple of years then, when you appeared on the scene in Vancouver, it was well formed because I gather you just appeared. They were drilling and so on when you first time you arrived.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you just decided to join through friends and.
Yes. Yeah.
That's how you got into the thing, really. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I have a picture here of Nellie.